Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, we're opening this week with some bluegrass guitar from Dayton, Ohio. 4 days in May, special 4 days in May edition. I think you guys are going to like it. All right, guys, good morning. It's, what day is it? Holy cow. It's Thursday, June 10th, 2010. That makes this Solder Smoke 125 much delayed. Sorry for the delay, fellas, but I've got good excuses. You'll hear about them as we go through. Part of them radio related, part of them summertime related, move related. Anyway, a long list of excuses, but here we are. Solder Smoke 125, possibly the last Solder Smoke from Italy. I know it's sad. It's sad for us too, but you know, there's a line in the Godfather movie that I repeat to the kids every time we get close to moving, because moving is the really tough part of this kind of job, especially if, like us, you've been fortunate to serve in nice places. And there's a line in the Godfather movie where I think it's the guy who's supposed to be Meyer Lansky talks to Michael Corleone, and Corleone is kind of complaining about all the heartache and violence, and Lansky kind of grabs him by the collar and says, "Michael, this is the life we have chosen." I tell that to the kids, and it seems to resonate with them for some strange reason, even though they had no choice in the matter. But anyway, off we go on the 1st of July. We're out of here, back to the USA, back to Northern Virginia, back to the Nova QRP Club. And anyway, it's difficult to leave a place like Italy, but that's it. Off we go. And we've been doing a lot of traveling here the last couple of months. We're all up in Tuscany, a place called Cortona, beautiful mountain town. Billy and his school orchestra had a concert up there. Had a great time. Got to look around the beautiful region of Tuscany again, and you know, it made it worse because the weather was great. The towns were beautiful, and you find yourself saying, I don't want to go. But we'll be back, and we're going to continue our ties and connections to Italy. We're going to have the kids continue to study. We're all going to continue to study the Italian language, so stay tuned. There may be future editions of Solder Smoke from Italy, but probably not for a little while anyway. All kinds of wildlife stories. We've been back out to the country house, which is in Lazio, up near Rieti. And Maria had a kind of scary close encounter with a viper. There are poisonous snakes in Italy, and Maria, while walking along the path, had one appear right in front of her. She didn't get bit or anything, and it probably wasn't even a close call, but scared the daylights out of her. More benign wildlife out there in Lazio. The last couple times we were out there, the fireflies were out, and really beautiful. Fireflies, Italian fireflies, at least the Lazio version of the Italian fireflies, are a bit different from the fireflies that we're used to in the northeast United States. They don't seem quite as bright. They're not putting out quite as many photons, and they're a little bit more yellow. And but there's a lot of them, and the scene just reminded me of a scene from the James Cameron movie Avatar. They were out there. We were out in the olive groves, checking out the fireflies. So that was really, really nice. Maria was out traveling also. She went up on a class trip to Umbria Apart from another trip to Umbria that we took, and then we were all out in the town of Perugia, which is also in Umbria. So a lot of traveling around, and we've been having a good time, a lot of Italian travelogue. But like I said, it's in Solder Smoke, the book, I note that at this point it's almost like a tornado is descending on you, and it's going to pick you up and grab all your stuff and take you off someplace else. So that's coming. In the next couple of weeks, I wanted to pass along a comment. When I was in the UK in February, Tony Fishpool and I were driving along the motorway on our way out to Dover, and Tony looked at me and he said, "I know what's wrong with you. You want to be a broadcaster." And then he kind of went through the list. He says, "You've got this podcast thing. You do beacons. You're a blogger. You admire this weird New York guy named Gene Shepard." Anyway, he went through the list, and I have to say, I think Tony's right. There seems to be some broadcast kind of instincts at work here. So I'll talk a little bit more about the beacons in a minute. But I've come to conclude that Tony's probably right. But speaking of Tony, this brings me to something I want to be sure to do in this issue, and I want to mention to you guys that an old book is now a new book, a book that really made a very valuable contribution to the ham radio library, has been released again, and I'm referring here to Practical and Tested Antenna Systems by Ian Kaiser, G3ROO, Roo, G3ROO, G3ROO, Roo. You guys know about kangaroo? Get it? That's where it all came from. And I was really very fortunate to visit Ian's really amazing ham radio complex out there in Dover with the Dover Construction Club. It's pictures of it are all up on the blog when I was back in the UK in February. But anyway, I hope I played some small part in this, but Ian, with the assistance of Tony, and Tony was the editor on the book, they have, and also with assistance from Nigel out there too, they have taken Ian's book and released it via Lulu, and Lulu is of course the same system that I use to print out and distribute Solder Smoke Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics. Anyway, Ian's book is up; it's available. And you can find it through the Solder Smoke blog. Just scroll down a little bit, and a few entries back, I put up all the information to find the book. If you have trouble finding it, I had no trouble this morning using the Lulu search. Just search under the title, Practical and Tested Antenna Systems, or Ian Kaiser, K-E-Y-S-E-R. It'll take you to the site. It's available as a download, and it's also available in, as people refer to it, the dead tree version, both at very reasonable prices, and I really think that you like this book. It's really practical. There's a substantial amount of theory in it, but it's only the theory that's related to really getting an antenna going, and it's sort of kind of the condensed wisdom of somebody who's worked successfully with antennas for many years, and it's exactly the kind of thing that radio amateurs need on their bookshelves. You know, in Solder Smoke, the book, I have a phrase in there that says it takes a library. You can't really hope to find one book that's going to get you everything you need to know. So you have to have kind of an arsenal of books there. And Ian's book definitely belongs in that arsenal. So go get it. You know, Lulu's got some really good offers going right now, and stand by here for a commercial announcement, but it's true. For people who are purchasing in the U.S., Lulu is offering free shipping all summer, and this really brings down the cost of book purchases substantially. So if you wanted to, you could buy Ian's book and my book at the same time, and get free shipping in the U.S. And you know, I kind of felt bad. I put this on the blog that when Lulu announced this free shipping offer that was U.S. only, um, I I kind of felt bad because it, you know, a good portion of our listeners and readers are outside the U.S. But there's another offer that people anywhere can take advantage of, and that's a 10% off sale. Good now, right now through the month of June, and the coupon code is SUMMERREAD, one word, SUMMERREAD, one word, SUMMERREAD 305, all together. It's a little coupon code when you go to the checkout there at Lulu. No matter where you are in the world, if you put in SUMMERREAD 305, you get 10% off. Now, you can't combine that with the free shipping, so it's probably better for U.S. buyers to go with the free shipping option. But anyway, it's a good time to pick up these books. Pick them up. Get Solder Smoke, Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics, and Ian's Practical and Tested Antenna Systems, and you'll be good for summer. This, you're going to take them to the beach. These are definitely two take them to the beach books. I think you'll enjoy them. All right, getting back to my beacon tendencies. My radioactivity in the last couple of months has really proved that Tony is correct, because I've been really focused on Whisper and QRSS. On QRSS, the really kind of the simple, I see QRSS as sort of the kind of the simple basic kind of beacon operation that we're engaged in today. I have continued to play with what I call my Da Vinci beacon. This is the little oscillator that started out just as sort of a frequency standard. And I call it the Da Vinci device because I used a paperback copy of the novel, The Da Vinci Code, as an insulator to prevent the thing from drifting. I had pictures of this up on the blog. If you go to the blog and search under beacon or Da Vinci, you'll find it. Anyway, when inspired by Hans Sommer's work with simple kind of FSK beacons, I turned this little board, and it's on a little 3x3 inch PC board. I turned it into a kind of self-sufficient, freestanding FSK transmitter. Right now, putting out about 13 or 14 milliwatts for kind of temperature regulation, and I put it in a little cardboard box, I guess the size of my fist, and I put it in a little cardboard box. I got one wire coming out for the 12 volts, and I've got another wire coming out for the antenna, and I turn this thing on, and it percolates along really, really nicely right there at 10140050 hertz. I took it out to the country with me not too long ago and hooked it up to the much superior dipole that I have out there in Rieti, and left it on one night, and sure enough, it was picked up in Pensacola, Florida. That was a real hoot. I had fun with that, and it was also picked up. And this is kind of an innovative thing that's happening with QRSS. EA1 FAQ, David, over there in Spain, has come up with a kind of an interesting way of allowing people to see the results of his receive operation, the results of his grabber operation. What he does is he produces kind of high-speed videotapes. I think he just puts the record software on and then takes a screenshot of his computer every minute or every 2 minutes, and then creates a video that runs it through. It's like you're watching a video on fast forward. So you could sit there and in 3 minutes watch, you know, several days of video. It's sort of like the Reader's Digest condensed version. And you could just sit there, and as it zips by, and he presents it on YouTube, you could see up there all of a sudden, you could see, I could see the familiar pattern of my beacon. And so I was able to then go to that point and look at the actual shots from EA1 FAQ's grabber operation. I think this was really innovative, and hats off to David for coming up with this system. But noticing that the conditions have been changing a bit on 30 meters, it used to be all winter long I would be kind of solidly into the receiver of Johan ON5EX up there in Belgium. But no longer. Now, very often I'm not making it into Johann's receiver at all, but I am getting into receivers that are much closer, into, for example, receivers in northern Italy, and all kinds of other kind of weird propagation. And some guys have been attributing it to sporadic E season over Europe. And so I do think there's some sporadic E going on, and we may be seeing that. Hey, there's a new grabber in Europe, by the way. And it's put up by a guy, I don't think he has a ham radio call sign, but he's got a very, very useful receive system. His name is Guanel. I think I'm pronouncing that correct. G-U-E-N-A-E-L, Guanel. And the site is called It's Raining Elephants Altogether. I don't know where that comes from, but It's Raining Elephants. And Guanel has a new grabber, and it's you can see it on some of the grabber aggregators that are out there. And I find it really useful. I can see my little signal there into France most of the day. So thanks to Guanel for putting that up, and three cheers for the new grabber. Shifting now to Whisper, I had to do a repair on my Whisper rig. For some reason, the SBL1 mixer on it was blown, and I'm not sure how I did that, but maybe I put a little bit too much juice into it. You know, those SBL1 mixers are kind of sensitive, and you hit them with a little too much audio or a little too much IF, and those hot carrier diodes will just release the smoke. I think that's what happened. And anyway, it was a very satisfying repair. I just went in there and yanked out that SBL1 mixer. I had another one here that Jim AL7RV had sent me, and Jim sent another ham radio care package. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Jim. Really appreciate it. It's going to result in a lot of additional solder smoke from this ham shack and from the Northern Virginia ham shack once we get back. Finally, guys, I got to tell you about my real project. And I'm proud of this because I've got it done. Well, just about done. You know, they're never really done, but just about done. I built, and I was inspired on this by W3PM. And he had a really simple Whisper transceiver. He has it up on the web. But I started out by building the little oscillator, the little fixed frequency oscillator that he had as the core of his rig, and I built it on the center of a big, fairly big PC board. It looks like about a 6x9, maybe 5x8 piece of PC board, and built a little oscillator in the center. And then I just sort of imagined building, you know, the transmitter off to the right, the receiver off to the left. And I think in the last issue of Solder Smoke, I told you guys about the progress on this rig. I didn't want to use any chips, so the receiver just consists of an SBL3 diode ring mixer that goes into an audio amplifier an audio amplifier completely designed by Roger KA7EXM. On the transmit side, I went with a singly balanced modulator with two diodes and a tri-filler transformer based on the very popular design. I got mine from Doug DeMaw. And this is the part that I'm happiest about. I always have a lot of trouble with the power amp. You know, you build the whole rig, and then for me, I've had this long, sad history of amplifiers that want to be oscillators. But I had, you know, sitting here on the shelf waiting for something to do, I had the little power amplifier from the Softrock SDR transceiver that the Softrock guy has very kindly sent to me a year or two ago. And you know, I've talked about my fingers that are too big for surface mount. Well, this was the one part of the transceiver that I was able to successfully build. And I had it sitting there, so I said, man, let me see if I could press this thing into service. So I put it in there, and I kind of fooled around a little bit with the impedance matching and got everything going. And sure enough, it worked. It worked like a charm. Really beautiful little amplifier circuit. But then, as I started poking around with it and fixing it and troubleshooting it, everything else, I managed to break it. And I discovered that, and again, this is no fault of the design. The design is brilliant. No fault of the kit. The kit is fantastic. I really recommend it. But it was just not really kind of for me, and it didn't really fit into this project in its kind of kit form. So I de-kitted it. and I kind of de-surface mounted it too. And what I did was I took all the parts and kind of spread them out a bit and went Manhattan style. So in the original version, it's the whole amplifier circuit with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 transistors on a little board about the size of your thumb. I just spread it out, put all the connections up top, Manhattan style, and now the whole thing probably is the size of, you know, your first three fingers. So significantly bigger, and everything up on top, and so it's easy to kind of troubleshoot and modify. And oh yeah, and I used binocular cores, but I used bigger ones because the little ones in the kit were just too small for me. So that's working fine, and I decided instead of building a second audio amplifier, I just put two relays in there, one to switch the input and one to switch the output of the of Roger Haywood's audio amplifier. Guys, the thing's working like a charm. It's sitting there. It's receiving whisper, and it's transmitting whisper. Let me see if anybody got me this morning. No, nobody so far this morning. But I'm looking at the whisper database. But I was being received all over Europe last night. Band might not be open yet. It's early in the morning. But anyway, a lot of fun. And here's the kicker. Now here's the thing that I think is going to make this really interesting. It's double sideband. It's got the little oscillator cooking along right at the operating frequency. And on the transmitter, that oscillator just goes to the balance modulator and the PA amp. On the receive side, it's a direct conversion receiver. I think I could use this thing for PSK31, because when I fire it up with FL Digi, the PSK31 operation is close enough to the whisper frequency that I think that I can go and make some PSK31 QSOs with this thing. I'm going to try that today. I'll probably report on this on the next solder smoke, but it definitely receives the PSK31 signals okay, and it transmits them all right also, so I should be able to make a contact. And if I ever stop yakking away here in the broadcast mode, as Tony Fishpool has noted, maybe I'll actually get to make a a QSO with this thing. All right, so that gets us to the that's the latest solder smoke that's being melted. This transceiver, by the way, it's going to be my last project here in Italy, and I was thinking about what I should call it, and you know, with my injury, which by the way is almost completely healed at this point. Thanks for all the expressions of concern. I thought about calling this the Achilles, but no, that would just conjure up just too many kind of bad medical memories here. But I have a joke in Italian, you know, and the way you say Achilles tendon in Italian is tendine di Achilles. And everybody knows right away what that means. But then I would tell people, no, that what I actually have is a broken tendine di Aquilone. And with that, and then the Italians think that I have kind of mispronounced something or bungled a word, because what I'm saying really with that is it's a kite tendon. And they say, no, tendine di Achilles. And I said, no, tendine di Aquilone, a kite tendon, because this is what happens when you're looking at the kite and not at the ground and you fall into a gopher hole. So I might call this this rig the Aquilone, the kite, the Italian kite. And it seems kind of appropriate. You know, low power out there, sailing through the ether. There you go. All right. All right, hold on one second here, guys. I gotta go and grab a book, and I hope let me see if I have it. Yeah, okay. Well, I guess I'm getting kind of in an inspirational mood here, or thinking about inspirational things, and that brings me to something that's really kind of a weird coincidence happened in the last week or so. The last time we went out to the country house, I stuck in my rucksack, well, my backpack, Paul Harden's book, The Electronic Data Book for Home Brewers. The book came out a number of years ago, and I've had it with me through all these trips. It's really an amazingly useful book, but I never really went through the chapters in which Paul describes the various designs of the different QRP rigs. A lot of focus on the NE602 rigs, but a lot of really good information about all kinds of QRP design. And Paul's got an amazing style, an amazing talent for making electronics and electronic theory accessible. I say it's a weird coincidence because right around the time I was sitting out there in the country in the Rieti province in Italy, thinking, wow, what a great book this is. Other people were doing the same thing, completely unconnected, completely spontaneously. On QRPL, a number of other people had started sending around messages saying, wow, what a great book, how can we get it, where is it, is it out of print? What really got me about the book was Paul's dedication. And I don't have it with me, I left it... I left it in the other room, and I have to wake up the family to go get it. But what really got me, he dedicated the book in part to everyone, to anyone who has soldered an IC in upside down. Stand by. Yeah, to anyone who has tried to solder with a cold soldering iron who has soldered an IC in upside down. Been there, done that, and when I read this dedication, I really said, wow, this is another reminder that this is a book for all of us. So I think Paul is making some effort to get it available again, and three cheers for that effort, three cheers for Paul. Paul's got, there's something I've been nagging him about, and I hope he doesn't get mad at me for mentioning it here on the show, but there's another publication that he did. I think it was for Atlanticon 2002. I've mentioned it here before. And it's a handyman's guide to QRP transmitters. And I have it. Tony Fishpool has it. And we've been kind of gently pushing Paul to make it available. We suggested a few minor kind of modifications with it, only because Paul was under, he had a bad cold when he drafted. We just found a few little typos in there. But anyway, if you know Paul, and if you have a way to say, hey, Paul, why don't you get that handyman's guide to QRP transmitters out to the world? It would be, I think, a major contribution. It's a shame that it's not more widely available. And anyway, we have been trying very diplomatically, because Paul's got a lot of things going on. He's exploring the far reaches of the universe with the Very Large Array, and so I feel guilty about going to them and saying, hey, you know, how about the QRP? Put the universe aside for a few minutes and let's do the QRP guide for the handyman's guide to QRP transmitters. But if you know Paul, I don't want to launch a big email campaign here, but you might mention to him, "Gee, Paul, it would be great if we get that publication out." But anyway, three cheers again for an amazing book, the Electronic Data Book for Home Brewers. Speaking of inspiration, during 4 days in May, it was almost kind of fate. I just happened to be in the shack, and I happened to go to the right site, just as George G3. RJV was stepping up to the microphone at 4 days in May in Dayton, and I caught live via video link his presentation there. And as always, inspirational, informative, great stuff. Which brings us to 4 days in May. And our correspondent, Bob Crane, W8SX, was on the scene. And I haven't listened to these yet, so I'm going to listen to them with you guys. And I'll try to offer commentary after each one. But let's now roll the audio tape and listen to the interviews that Bob did out there in Dayton during 4 days in May. Stand by.
Okay, George Dobbs, GPRJV, from 4 days in May at Dayton. We're now into the second day. We had the first day with all the seminars and the talks. It was a grand day, some excellent speakers. I did one of my sort of straightforward talks about the history of my radio and the fun that I've had. I guess it was an old talk re-sprayed, but it went down well. Today we've been in Tahara to the main sales part of Dayton, and we've sold quite a lot of stuff. Oh, the QRPs are now meeting for vendors' night, and also we are judging. Well, we have judged. We are going to award the prizes to a contest this year, which was to make a transceiver with no more than 72 parts, and it must be a superhit as well. And there were four entries. I was a judge. No man ought to be called to be a judge on the work of his friends, but I was called to be a judge. We have picked one, but it was tremendously difficult, and we're going to announce who it was soon. But the standard of the entries was extremely high. Keeping it to 72 parts was difficult. I think we're probably going to see all four of them in print, but they may add a few bits, because in the use of the 72, things have been, well, it's a struggle, so a few more parts will make them a better and a viable thing to build. And the other thing of note I can think of is the GQRP Club had a kit here for the first time for over 20 years since we had a kit, and it's what we call the Limerick Sudden. It's a version of the Sudden on 40 metres, covers the whole band, and it's built kind of Manhattan style on pads, and the pads are isolated by an overlay of black, and it looks very splendid.
It's a beautiful.
Yeah, in fact, when the first board came, I built the first one from the first board when they arrived, and I looked at the board, and I was loath to solder the board and spoil it. It was so nice. So it's a thing to watch out for. Have a look at the GQRP Club website, and we hope it'll be a kit that many people will try as their first attempt at building.
It would be a beautiful kit for a kid to build.
Oh, yeah, it is. It would be ideal for training or for scouts or for school groups. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, this is Hans G0 UPL, Golf Zero Uniform Papa Lima. And I've given a talk today about QRSS. So I introduced the principles of QRSS. Basically some little bits of the theory about why we do it, and then went through a number of different projects that I've done, and at the end I've introduced a kit that I've produced with G0 XAR. So that's what my speech is about today.
Okay, and are you enjoying the FDM?
I love FDM, and I'm looking forward to the Hamvention tomorrow and the massive flea market, of course. But for me, the best part is meeting everyone and the conversations that go on, meeting all old friends.
Oh, marvelous. I can't think of anything else. You want to say anything to Bill while you're there?
To Bill? I'm looking forward to meeting you, Bill, when you come to London. We've been planning this for a while, so I'm looking forward to welcoming you into my shack to have a look at the radios and have some good conversation about QRSS and QRP and any other topics that we come across.
Okay, marvelous.
This is Dennis Blanchard, K1YPP from Sarasota, Florida. Although with the K1YPP call letter, I'm originally from New England, spent most of my life there. I'm here tonight at FDIM with my new book, and the title of it is 300 Zeros, Lessons of the Heart on the Appalachian Trail. And it's only been out there a couple of months, so I'm a new author. The reason the book came about is I took a QRP rig, and in 2007 I was going to hike the Appalachian Trail from one end to the other. I got as far as from Springer Mountain in Georgia to southern Virginia, and I was having chest pains. So I hopped off the trail. I figured I'd run back to Sarasota, Florida, and get checked, and then get back to the trail. Well, they took one look at me, and they put me right in for a six-artery heart bypass. So I took 300 days off for that, and hikers refer to any day they're not doing miles as a zero day because they're doing 0 miles. So hence the title of the book, 300 Zeros. I got back on the trail in 2008, where I got off, and hiked on right through to Mount Katahdin in Maine, finished all 2,176 miles. My goal was to get on the air from every state on CW with my QRP rig. I started out the pre-surgery section with a home-brewed 80-40 meter QRP rig, basically part W7EL design and the rest of it more or less my own design. And that weighed about 3 pounds, which is very heavy when you're hiking long distances. I wrote an article for World Radio Magazine about the hike and how I had to get off with the heart problem. And Steve Weber, next thing I know, I get a package in the mail. He says, "That radio you're carrying is way too heavy. Carry this." And he gave me an ATS-3 prototype of his. So for the rest of the hike, I used the ATS-3, and that was a real joy. It was absolutely fabulous. I ended up on the hike working 2 field days in 2007, pre-heart attack, heart operation, and then 2008 post-heart operation, both times, oddly enough, from Virginia. It was the chance of a lifetime. I was absolutely thrilled to, first of all, live through it all, and have all the encounters with all the wonderful Americans I met out there. Just absolutely wonderful people that help all the hikers and all the hams I met along the way. I met a number of them. Everybody just helped me out. So I came back and put together a book about the whole experience. It's amateur radio centric, but the general public won't get that that's what I'm really trying to do. It's about ham radio, it's about having heart surgery and the recovery process, and it's about hiking the Appalachian Trail. And you can check out 300zeros.com for more information. Thanks for listening to me.
Thank you. First, give you a call.
Hello, this is Jay, Kilowatt 4 Zulu, Lima Echo. And I was fortunate enough to give a presentation today with Jim, K8IKE. We talked about building a good enough test bench or performance test bench for the average amateur radio operator. We took and looked at 4 receiver tests and 5 transmitter tests that the average ham can do with hopefully not real expensive test equipment, and come out with some at least comparable results, if not some finite numbers to look at to do comparisons with commercial gear.
Okay. And where'd you get the idea for what kind of tests to do?
Well, what we looked at is Jim and I meet every week for breakfast, and just like to build things and come up with different projects. And last year, Ed Hare gave an excellent presentation on the type of test that the ARL does for performance testing. And he gave us a CD, everybody that attended, a CD with a lot of articles, plus the ARL test procedures manual. And that's what prompted Jim as we went through that manual. Hey, look, we can do these tests, and we don't need to spend this kind of money to build a lab like the ARL has.
Great. And so pretty much anybody with a little bit of technical skill and reading ability could do it.
We think so, yeah. You got to read the manual, which we did do on a couple occasions. That led to some additional testing. But, yeah, you just read the manual and think of what they've got, and you can come up with some alternatives for the test equipment that they use that are certainly within your average, you as the average ham, within your test range or within your pocketbook's range.
Marvelous. You enjoying the conference?
I'm enjoying this conference very much. This is, I think, I've been here every year since it's been here, in 2 years while I was still over at the Ramada. So I think this is my 6th year, but I'm not exactly sure. This to me is Dayton versus Hamvention itself.
Marvelous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Steve, KD1JV, And I guess we're going to talk about the new Appalachian Trail Sprint 4 radio, which came out a couple months ago. This was the latest version of the ATS series, which started out as a miniature trail-friendly radio that fit in an Altoids tin, and it slowly evolved over the years into a more of a deluxe radio in this particular iteration. This the Dash 4 model now has an LCD display, and the band modules have been replaced by switch selected filters. And since the board is now too big to fit in an Altoids tin, it now comes in a custom aluminum case. And like all the pretty predecessor radios of this type, this thing sold out in an incredibly short period of time. Of course, most of the ones that have been sold have not yet been built, so we're still waiting to see how well people managed to get them going. And I really can't think of much else to say.
Well, was there much of a design change except for packaging in the new ATS 4?
Well, yeah, the addition of the LCD display required quite a few changes in the firmware, at least, and the packaging of the rig. Other than that, the basic circuitry for the receiver and the transmitter is remained stable over the successive of designs. Most of the changes have been just firmware changes and how it operates, and the addition of additional bands from the original 4-band series up to 6 bands, and now back down to 5 bands because of space limitations.
And I understand you have an attachment lets it read PSK31.
Yeah, Voltec OK1IAK, I believe his call is. I designed a program called Pocket Digi for portable PSK operation, and he wrote new firmware for the 3B series to allow it to transmit PSK signals using his Pocket Digi. And he had an idea for a standalone PSK reader decoder, which finally came to fruition, was finally completed recently, which is a small circuit board, not much larger than the LCD display, which reads the decoded signals on the display. So we now have a complete PSK station, portable PSK station, that does not require a full-fledged PC or powerful computer to do that mode with.
Perfect. All you can hold it all in one hand or two hands?
Well, sort of two hands, but it is a very compact package, and of course it requires very little battery support because of the low power requirements of the ATS rig, and the PSK reader runs on a single lithium battery, so it'll run quite a long time on a small power cell. So no longer, if you want to do portable PSK, do you need a full sideband rig and a laptop computer in order to do that.
So I can do it from the trail.
You could do it from the trail.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Scott Anderson, NE1RD. And I spoke at 4 Days in May on the 100-pound de-expedition, QRP style. The talk centered around carrying a small amount of radio equipment with you on your next vacation. In my case, I try to bring 100 pounds or less. And on the for the talk mainly centered around a trip that I made to the Virgin Islands in March for the CQ Worldwide WPX contest. Just happened to be a nice weekend to get on the radio. According to the contest sponsor, CQ Magazine, 4,500 logs have already been turned in, so it was a very busy weekend. I operated 15 meters QRP, single band, and worked about 25 hours and made almost 800 contacts. I did pretty well. I'm very pleased with my results, but more than that, I had a lot of fun.
And where does that put you in the world standing?
Well, all results so far are unofficial. CQ Magazine will publish the official results in January of 2011. But right now, according to the submitted scores and claim scores, I've got the top world score for QRP 15 meters.
And what kind of rig did you use?
I used an ICOM 7000 mostly because it had a voice keyer in it, which saved my voice. I was working about one person a minute and CQing three or four times a minute, so you can imagine what that would have done to me had I not had the voice keyer. Normally, I'd use something like a 703 or one of the Elecraft K2s that I've built. But the voice keyer, because it was a phone contest, was a big help.
Okay. Anything else? You enjoying the EPTIM?
I was delighted with all of the talks at this year's 4 days in May. We had talk on contesting, and of course, Reverend George Dobbs is always a hoot. I can see why they bring him back every year. Looking forward to walking around Hera Arena and seeing all the great new stuff. And I've got a long drive back home on Sunday, but it's been well worth it.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello, everyone. This is Dave Kripe. Call is NM0S here at FDIM 2010, describing my entry for the 72-component homebrew challenge that was part of FDIM this year. I had an entry that used exactly 72 components and like to talk about it a little bit. It's a 7 megahertz super heterodyne transceiver. It uses a 4.52 megahertz PTO to generate the frequency, and it's a very simple design using a single 2N7000 MOSFET, a single slug-tuned coil, two capacitors, and a resistor. And I found that this design is very stable, very forgiving, and very repeatable. That works in conjunction with an 11.52 megahertz crystal filter to operate at the 7 megahertz. As part of the design rules, we had a constraint of only being able to use one IC of the 72 components. And the IC that I chose was a 74HC240, which is an octal driver chip, inverting driver. And they are in banks of four, and each bank of four is selectable to operate nominally or in a tri-state mode high impedance output. So the chip can essentially act as a multiplexer. The power amplifier is a push-pull class E configuration delivering 4 watts at better than 90% efficiency. And during the receive mode, we remove the DC from the drain choke and feed the VFO frequency into the PA. So the PA devices are still switching, but they switch and act as a switching mixer, mixing the 7 megahertz coming in to the IF frequency. So the center tap of the output transformer feeds directly into the IF filter, completely eliminating any type of TR switching or any complications for diplexing. Four-pole filter with a 500 Hz Gaussian response into a Gilbert cell built of discrete components and into a 2-transistor output amplifier. Using a very conventional JFET mixer to mix the VFO and the LO frequency through a 2-pole bandpass filter to get the 7 megahertz for the driver. And that is it in a nutshell. The output provides FCC legal limits for output harmonics, operates on a minimum of current consumption, and in the enclosure that I had has room for 8 AA batteries to generate 12 volts. So all in all, it was a lot of fun to build and had a lot of interest in it so far this weekend, and having a good time.
Great.
Are you going to publish the design?
I have been requested to do so, so look for it in a future issue of QRP Quarterly.
Great. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Don, W3FPR, and I'm here at Dayton just having a great time. I brought my grandson with me, and this is his first time at Dayton and FDIM. And he was bored with some of the seminars, but the other ones he was really excited about, especially George Dobbs' presentation. And I'm just having a ball here at Dayton, enjoyed all the seminars, particularly George Dobbs, of course. He's always entertaining no matter what happens. And I just enjoy myself. I'll be spending some time in the flea market tomorrow and Saturday, and we'll spend some time at the Yellowcraft booth, get Josh his brand new ham badge, and essentially just have fun.
I understand you do something for Yellowcraft. You want to tell people what it is?
I repair Yellowcraft gear, yes, all except for the K3s. I will do K3 upgrades, but I do primarily K2 repairs, although I get quite a few K1s, KX1s. I have been selected as the KX1 3080 band expert, declared so by Wayne. And I have, it produces enough money for me to come to Dayton and have a little more fun with my ham radio hobby, buys me a few little goodies, and that's my primary purpose in doing that. It doesn't hurt the family budget, which is now on a fixed income, but I do enjoy it. I enjoy answering questions on the Yellowcraft reflector and responding to people's problems. I probably enjoy deciphering, going through the schematic, figuring out exactly what the problem is as much as helping people with it. But both aspects are very nice, and I like puzzles.
And how many might you do, say, in a year or a month or a year?
Well, it varies. Sometimes I have zero backlog, and I can get a break for two or three days, maybe even a week at a stretch. Other times I have 2 weeks of backlog that I keep trying to peel down and keep working. I do both new builds, upgrades. The new builds and upgrades take more time than most repairs. Sometimes repairs can be a little bit head-scratching and have to probe around and find out exactly what the problem is. Make a few guesses, some of them wrong, and finally put my finger on exactly what the problem is and get it straightened out, and then align, put it in a package, and send it off. That's the procedure. There's nothing defined about it. And I think I've developed techniques and the test equipment required in order to do that job in a relatively efficient manner. And I've been doing this now for, independently, I've been doing it probably since 2004 for Yellowcraft. I've been doing it since 2006. So I have a fair amount of experience with it and enjoy every minute of it.
Wonderful. And having a good time here.
I am having an absolute great time, and I expect to have an absolute great time for the next 2.5 days here, and then I have to get in the car and suffer that 9-hour drive to get back to North Carolina.
Well, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah, hi, I'm Gary Breed, K9AY, and here at FDIM I talked about QRP on the low bands. And it really was just an overview introduction to what's unique about the 80 and 160 meter bands, and then how you can make the choices on antennas and operating to get the best out of your QRP operation. I might note that at the beginning of the talk, I did ask how many guys have never made a contact on 160, and it was a substantial part of the audience. So I do hope I made a difference in some of them getting started. The sorts of things I talked about to the group started with the unique characteristics of the low bands. You know, they're noisier. They have such long wavelengths that antennas start getting really big if you want to do a full half wave or quarter wave. And it also introduced the propagation's a little different. And with that background of what's unique about the low bands, we moved on to looking at some of the antenna options, both for transmitting and receiving. Big transmit antennas and the options for making them smaller, and also receiving antennas, because on the low bands, having a separate antenna to receive on is often very critical to success, to deal with both noise and with some of the lack of directivity with the simpler antennas that you have to build, as compared, for example, to a beam on the high bands. You can't do that for transmit on 160, so you have to do something else to have some directivity and get rid of some of that QRM and noise. So that's what we talked about on the technical side. And we wrapped it up with a number of suggestions and recommendations and expectations for what you can do on the band. And in general, it seemed pretty well received. I got a lot of questions afterwards, so I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Robert Crane, W8SX, broadcasting from the Dayton Hamvention in the flea market, which has now quieted down a bit. Today's a perfect day for the Hamvention, or at least a perfect day for the flea market. Usually it's hot, dusty, and somewhat miserable. Or it can be cold and raining, but today it's about 20 degrees centigrade or about 68 Fahrenheit, and there's no rain. Some high clouds keeps the sun off of us, and it's pretty nice out here. Lots and lots of stuff to look at. For Bill, I've seen about 4 2Bs complete, one of them with a 2BQ. They're all about $200, and they look a bit tired. So you might want them, but you might want to clean them up. There are a bunch of pieces of gear that are older this year, a lot of Helicrafters, a lot of Collins, National, etc., etc. The other thing you can find here is if you happen to have a 486 PC, you can find all the parts to rebuild it or keep it going, along with the software. If you need Windows 95, brand new, you can find it here. And the other thing I've seen is a couple of HW8s. So, Bill, if you need another HW8, they've got them, but you might have to send away for them. The only other thing that's really kind of fun is there's a fellow walking around in an Apollo-era space uniform, which must be really, really hot and miserable, but he's walking around getting lots of attention for that. So that's what the Hamvention's like on the outside. On the inside, it is jam-packed full of people. A lot more people this year than I've seen in the past. Lots of booths and lots of people buying things. So the economy must be up, or people must be feeling better about the economy. So, if you ever get the chance, it's certainly a place to come for parts. I bought a few parts that I'm going to convert into various projects around the shack. Or if you want new equipment, that's about 25% off on new equipment. But you do have to pay sales tax here. So there are lots of dealers offering lots of deals at the moment. So, this is Bob, W8SX, at the Dayton Hamvention in Dayton, Ohio, in May. Talk to you later. Bye.
Amazing. Fantastic. Thanks to Bob Crane, W8SX, for that fantastic piece of ham radio journalism. Our correspondent in Dayton, Ohio, for yet another year. Great job. Very interesting. God, I wish I was there. You know, maybe next year. You know, we're going to be a lot closer. Going to be up there in Northern Virginia, which is, relatively speaking, right around the corner. Guys, we're running short of time, but it wouldn't be a Solder Smoke without Solder Smoke Mailbag.
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
I love it.
Indeed. Mark, VK6WV, very kind enough to send me a packet of European transistors coming all the way to me from Perth in Western Australia. Thanks, Mark. I'll put them to use. It's really cool to see those little Euro transistors with the kind of weird markings that begin with B. I've read about them all these years in Sprat, and now it's time for me to put them in some circuits. Thanks very much. We've been getting a bit of mail from an American radio amateur who is living in Turkey right now. His name is Grayson, call sign KJ7UM/Tango Alpha 2. He's been in Turkey for over a year, but hasn't had any local contacts, and I think he's kind of hoping to make contact with some local radio amateurs in Turkey. So I believe he's in Istanbul. I'm not sure. But if anybody out there has any contacts in that ham radio community, let me know and I'll relay it to Grayson. Been getting some really nice email from Keith, VE3 Tango Zulu Foxtrot. He really liked the book, and he sent along, as many people did, and I thank you all, he sent along best wishes for what he referred to as my nerdy kite injury, because you guys know that I injured my leg while flying a kite, which somehow seems appropriate. And he kind of called my injury kind of nerdy, but then he admitted, and you really should never do this, Keith, he admitted to an injury that he has that is sort of technically related. He has Rubik's Cube tendonitis in his thumb. Gentlemen, that, you know, with that injury, your nerd meter is pegged. It is all the way full over to the right. So, you know, a kite-related Achilles tendon injury just doesn't compare. Thanks for the email, Keith. Really appreciate it. Keith also sent along a nice mail about books that influenced him in his youth, and I liked it so much I put it up on the blog, so take a look. The guy who straightened me out on the North American nebula that I was not, in fact, looking at through the telescope, call sign was KY2O. I had it wrong, but so it's KY2O. I must have been groggy from the painkillers. sorry about that. Nick, G8INE, sent me, he sent me a package, what we all need. He sent me a package of toroids, and it was so nice of him to do that. There's somebody else who needs toroids worse than I do, so I'm going to send a portion of that care package off to a friend in Mexico, and who knows, there'll probably be rigs sprouting up in Guadalajara as a result of Nick's kindness. Thanks very much. Got an interesting message from Michael, a DL4, Mike Golf Mike. He says that I could combine both my Whisper and QRSS signals and send them through the same linear final and be on both modes at the same time. Hadn't really thought about that. It's an interesting thought. We may give that a go. Thanks, Michael. Steve, G0FUW, reports on the Bath Buildathon. He said it won a national award for what he referred to as mass knack therapy. Congrats, Steve, and thanks for keeping us posted on the activities out there in Bath. Bill, Alpha Alpha 4, Golf November, is now studying the technical portions of Solder Smoke the book, and I was really gratified by his message. He said he's found the technical portions really useful in his efforts to understand the theory, and he liked it so much he took the book to the Office Depot and got it spiral bound so it can lay flat so he can study better. Good idea, great. I'm glad you find it useful, Bill, and thanks for the kind message. Doug, KI6FEN, he too built the W3PM Colpus oscillator, and I told him that he could go ahead and try to turn it into a standalone QRSS rig. I think he needs a QRSS frequency crystal. If anybody can help out with that, let me know. Leaf, KC8RWR, is building a Michigan Mighty Mite. Glad to hear it, Leaf. It's a great way to get going, get started. I think that was the first homebrew rig that I built when I got back into radio in the Dominican Republic. Brent, KD0GLS, is reading Solder Smoke Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics, and he too shares my deep opposition to the concept of hole movement. You know what I'm talking about. You're talking about holes moving through the semiconductor crystal matrix. Just say no to hole movement. That's what we both say. Got a really nice email from Roger Hayward at KA7EXM, and he gives me a lot of news on things that's happening out there and things that are happening out there in Oregon in his ham shack, and he has more hybrid Cascode IF amp kits ready to ship. Really nice kits, and you can find out more information. Go to ka7exm.net. I say again, ka7exm.net. For more information on these really wonderful hybrid Cascode IF amps based on a design by SubW7ZOI, and Roger's put the kits together. Great stuff. Roger also reports that a milestone has been reached. The EMRFD Yahoo group, which I am a member of and really enjoy reading the email, very high level, well, I wouldn't say really super high level, but a kind of appropriately high-level technical discussions, very focused on the book Experimental Methods in RF Design and the concepts discussed in that great book. He says that Roger reports that there are now 1,000 members on the EMRFD Yahoo group. So if you're interested, just check out the Yahoo groups and go to EMRFD, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Got an email from Farhan, all the way over there in India. Hadn't heard from our friend Farhan in a long time. He's reading Solder Smoke, the book. I don't want to put words in his mouth here. I don't want to say he's endorsing it, but I was really pleased with the initial feedback he gave me. He says that it reads like a Woodhouse novel. And he says, quote, "The smells and sounds of old rigs came back to me. The damp smell of my uncle's cabinet where he stored his tools. The fresh paint off Subi's valve transmitter." All right, Farhan, I hope you continue to enjoy it. Thanks very much. And I spotted a bit of mail. This wasn't really directed at me, but I spotted a bit of mail on QRPL from one of the really great authors in the ham radio world. And I hadn't seen anything from him in a while. Aid Weiss, the author of The Joy of QRP and the History of QRP. I really enjoy the History of QRP book. And Aid sent in a report on working the WPX contest. He was focusing on working DX during the WPX contest from a location 40 miles north of Mexico. He points out that he's no longer roughing it. He wants he needs the comforts of home, so no more camping for Aid. But great to see something from him, and brought back all memories of great books. Hey, one other thing I wanted to mention here before we close. I had a really, this is the kind of author, speaking of authors, this is the kind of author experience that that really provides a kick. I was walking through the piazza here, Piazza di San Cosimato, which is our piazza, kind of our central square in our part of Rome where the kids play, where I threw the football around with Billy all these years, and Maria did her roller skating and all that. And I'm standing there, and a guy walks up to me, and he says, "Bill, N2CQR, right?" And he immediately identified himself as Andrea, IW0HK, and he said, "I read the book. I really liked it." I guess he recognized me from the pictures in the book. Man, I'm telling you, you want to talk about author gratification. I was just blown away by it. Now, it's not quite as freaky a coincidence as you'd think, because over the last couple of years, Andrea and I have been exchanging emails, and he generally knew that I was sort of close to his his part of Rome, and I knew that he was in the kind of the next neighborhood over. But still, it was great fun. All right, one final thing. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier. A couple of new terms have come up in ham radio, thanks to some people who are Solder Smoke listeners or in the Solder Smoke community. I noticed that when George Dobbs was speaking at Dayton, he used a term that I thought was very cool: socketry. Socketry. He said, I then placed the circuit board in the box with all the associated socketry. You guys know what I mean. And then Michael, AA1TJ, talked about muncing, reducing the parts counts in a transceiver, and he's following the example of that guy who cut out all the unnecessary parts in the TV. I may have mentioned this before because I know I was talking about Michael's win at the minimal arts section, but he used the term muncing, and I thought that was pretty good. And if I did say it before, it's worth repeating. All right, guys. Hey, that might ramp it up for us from Rome. It's been great talking to you from this location. And there may be a gap here. I may be off the off the podcast circuit here for a little while until we get set up at the new location. But it's been great. I've enjoyed talking to you about Rome and Italy. And this is not the end of our experience with this great country. We'll be back. And I'll just say for now, arrivederci. And I'll conclude here with over to you, Maria.
Ciao, bravi ragazzi.